according to their interpretations and their ideology, if someone is what they call Ahel Kitab, if you're a person of the book, if you are Jewish or you're Sabian or you're Christian, there are very few Jews in Iraq, but if you're Sabian or Christian, you are given options. You pay jizya, which is like a tax, a protection tax, or you leave, or you convert. And if you refuse to do those three things, then you'll suffer the penalty, which is usually death. If you are Shia, for example, Shabak or Turkmen or just Shia Arab, you are given the option of repenting. In other words, becoming a good Sunni Muslim and repenting your ways, your errors. And if you relapse, of course, then they'll punish you more severely, perhaps even kill you. If you are a Yazidi, for example, whom they regard as kafir, which means an unbeliever, they don't give them that option. They give them the option of converting or dying. And, you know, we've had continual atrocities committed against civilians in a very systematic way. And the aim appears to be the suppression, the expulsion, or the extermination of different groups living in areas of their control. We're talking about mass displacement of large numbers of people, daily atrocities committed, targeting civilians directly, targeted killings, burning of property, sexual slavery. Women and children are being abducted and forced into slavery, sexual slavery. Some are being sold as faraway places of Syria and other areas.
And this has been spreading since June, you say. You see it's spread out of the governorate of Anbar and it's spreading into how much of the country?
Well, about a third of the country. I mean, this is the area that is under the control of the Daesh and associate with the Daesh, I mean the ISIL and the associated groups. And they carry out these policies rather systematically, but they also target, you know, members of the Sunni community or any person they perceive who doesn't comply with their rules or conduct of behavior or is seen or perceived to be a threat to their ideology or their control. So the situation in ISIL-controlled areas is very bad.
We certainly get a sense of that from the report. There was just one detail I wanted to follow up, really. The recruitment of children. Do you have any more detail on where they're being recruited, what they're being asked to do?
In terms of ISIL, we've had reports that children as young as 10, you know, have been recruited by them. People have contacted us from ISIL-controlled areas, from Mosul and places in Anbar, saying that children as young as 10 have disappeared from their families, that they've been located later in ISIL recruitment centres. They're brainwashing these children. Some of these children have said to their parents that they're there to fight jihad and go to paradise. But also, we've heard that they've been used in a number of cruel ways, and we've had a couple of reports where teenagers, children have been used as suicide bombers. We've also had reports where children have been made to fight in the front line as a shield for ISIL fighters in order to be able that ISIL fighters can retreat from the battlefield or wounded ISIL fighters can be taken from the battlefield. We've also had situations where it's been reported that children have been forced to give blood in hospitals and clinics to provide blood for injured or wounded ISIL fighters.
And amid this deteriorating picture that you're painting, I think we want to stop there, it's just too awful. What exactly are you going to do with this report?
We're saying to the government and to the international community as well that, you know, they all must act to ensure that areas are liberated from ISIL and its associated groups as quickly as possible. But in doing that, because we've seen a rise of revenge killings, etc., and a breakdown in law and order in some of the areas that are being liberated, we're saying to the government they must do all they can to assert the rule of law and good governance back into those areas that are liberated as quickly as possible. We have IDPs who are doing spontaneous returns, some of them going back to their villages, and the services in those villages were very poor before the conflict. Now they're non-existent.
How is the Iraqi government looking? Are you optimistic at all about this?
I am, because the government's been saying all the right things. For the first time in a while, you know, the government is acknowledging that there have been serious systemic problems in the country, including issues relating to the provision of basic services and the rule of law, etc. They're understanding, you know, they've got to tackle the issues that have fueled the violence or have been, you know, the root causes of violence. And they're actually open to discussion of the best ways to approach these things and, you know, including comprehensive legal reform, reform of the security sector, ensuring the provision of goods and services. So, you know, for the first time, you know, we've got a government that is actually saying the right things. But I think the international community has to garner itself to be able to put that goodwill into affirmative and concrete action.